We had a lot of well-rested parents. In fact, our first service was packed with parents. Got to pick up at, 4 o'clock today? So they were like, we are going to capitalize as much as we can on our time today. But I know the kids, I'm sure they've just had an exceptional time and just spending moments together, growing in those relationships and growing in their relationship with the Lord. You know, if you're a parent, I think every parent feels this way. You often will feel like you're failing with your kids, don't you? Are we yelling too much? Are we too hard on them? Are we too lenient? Are we doing this right? And every single parent, I think, struggles with, you know, are we ruining our kids or are we actually doing good things for our kids? And let me tell you this. There's only two things you really need to do with your kids. One is to show them what a good marriage looks like. And the second one is to lead them to the Lord. And if you can do those two things, you're winning. Okay? The rest of it will come in time. But if we teach them those foundations, those will be the things that stick with them throughout their lives. So I know, hopefully you'll enjoy it. Maybe you guys will have one more little lunch together or just a few moments together. But I know our kids have probably had a wonderful time just being apart and being with each other, which is great. Today we're kind of diverting away from the finding and following series that we've been doing. And for the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about this idea called just Emmanuel. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of walk through what this word means and how it really is designed to function in our walk with the Lord. You know, we usually use the word Emmanuel. We usually use it around Christmas time because that's when we generally read these scriptures about Jesus coming into the world. And so we read passages like the one out of Isaiah chapter 7 that says, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and she will give birth to a son and we will call him Emmanuel." And then when there's the retelling of this story in Matthew chapter 1 where Mary and Joseph are a part of this, we kind of have a retelling of this Isaiah passage that says, "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they shall call him Emmanuel." And then Matthew adds, "And that means God with us." John is a little more obscure in the way that he says it, but in the prologue, in the first chapter of John chapter 1, John writes and he says, "And then the Word became flesh," meaning God became one of us, became Emmanuel, "and made his dwelling place among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the only Son who came from the Father, filled with grace and truth." And if we translate the word Emmanuel, quite literally it means God with us, or maybe more specifically, God among us. The word El at the end of Emmanuel is the first name of Elohim, which is one of the names of God. And the first part of that word means the amongness of us, of the one of God. The one of God that has made himself near. And this is not just a name, this is a role. You know, we never see Jesus in the New Testament called Emmanuel. We see him called Jesus or Rabbi or Messiah or Savior. But Emmanuel is not just, hey, this is his name. Emmanuel is, this is what God is trying to do with his people. And what we find out very quickly is that Emmanuel, this motif of Emmanuel, is not just found in Jesus, it's found throughout Scripture. God has always tried to be among us. He has always tried to walk with us. We're the ones that often seem to miss that. God is always making his presence known and trying to share it with us. Now today, over the course of the next 4 weeks, we're going to do four different Old Testament stories that many of which you've heard already. And we're going to talk about how they really get to the heart of what God is trying to do through this idea of Emmanuel. The one we're going to talk about today is the story of Jericho. Now you remember, if you went to Sunday school at all, you know the story of Jericho. Even if you didn't grow up in church, you generally will know the story of the city of Jericho. But the story of Joshua 5 and 6, which we're going to read here in just a little bit, actually goes back a few chapters. To the book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 14. This is where the people rebel against God. You remember Moses has led the Israelites out of Egypt. They've gone to Mount Sinai. God has given them the law. And he's given them the tabernacle and the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. God is the one who is walking with them through everything. And God takes them, all these Israelites, probably about a couple of years after they've come out of Egypt and they've done all the things they do, takes them to the bank of the Jordan River and says, I want you to cross the river and I want you to take this city. And so they send the 12 spies, of which Caleb and Joshua are a part of those 12 spies. You remember the story, right? They go into the city, they come back to Moses, and Joshua said, yeah, let's go, we're ready. And Caleb says, I'm with Joshua, we're on God's side. And the 10 say, oh, we can't do this. These people are huge. We're just a nomadic desert people. How are we going to defeat an entire city? And their pessimism infiltrates every single person in Israel. And they decide, we can't do it. It's impossible. And then what God does is he said, then I want you to turn around. I want you to go back to them. It's kind of interesting because this is actually a moment of God's grace. He doesn't just open the ground and let these people be swallowed up and destroyed. He says, you need to turn around and you're going to spend 40 years wandering around the desert. And hopefully during those 40 years, you're going to teach your children to have courage and faith and not make the same mistakes that you made when you got to the water's edge and I told you to take the city. They spend 40 years in the desert. All of those people die in the desert with the exception of Joshua and Caleb, who then become the next leaders of Israel. But then the origin of the story of Jericho starts in Joshua chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, and it says this. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went to him and said, are you with us or are you with our enemies? Neither, he replied. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Isn't that a cool scene? Joshua realized this guy's an angel. He is a messenger from God, and he happens to be God's top general in God's army. It says Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and said, what message does the Lord have for his servant? The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And Joshua did so. Now, we have seen this image before. We saw this image in the story of Moses. When God has called Moses to go and lead the Israelites out of Egypt, he goes into a cave and he sees the burning bush. You remember this story. And God says, I need you to take off your sandals because where you're standing is holy ground. And isn't it interesting that Moses has spent a lot of his life running away from God? He killed an Egyptian and then he fled to the land of Midian. And this is the moment where God says, I tell you what, you need to take off your shoes. You need to get your feet right in my presence because I'm about to send you back to Egypt and you're going to help people journey and find themselves as a nation. Your feet are going to matter, and so your feet better be planted in my presence first. And then with Joshua, he is about to lead the armies of Israel. The same thing happens. We've got to make sure your feet are right, that you're following me first before you lead any people on their journey. And isn't it ironic that we know with the story of Jericho that for 6 days they marched around the city. That's what God tells them to do. You're going to march around the city for 6 days. And you're not going to talk. You're going to leave your camp. You're going to cross the Jordan. And then you're going to walk around the city. Now imagine if Jericho was a fortified city. It was a big city. It was a daunting place to look at. And they closed up the gates when they saw the Israelite armies on the other side of the Jordan. And they were ready. And on day one, they saw the Israelite army coming towards them, and they got their swords and their shields, and they put their armor on. And Israel walked around the city and went back to their camp. Day two, they saw Israel coming. They got ready with their swords and their shields. Israel came and walked around the city and went back. By day three, they were, well, let's see what's going to happen. Maybe they started to yell insults over the wall at the people. Maybe they started throwing things. And Israel just walks around the city for the third day, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth. says on the seventh day, they got up at daybreak and marched around the city seven times in the same manner, except on that day they circled the city seven times. The seventh time around, when the priest sounded the trumpet blast, Joshua commanded the army, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city and all that is in it is to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall be spared, because she hid the spies that we sent. But keep away from the devoted things, so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it. All the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are sacred to the Lord and only for his treasury." When the trumpet sounded, the army shouted. And the sounds of the trumpet, when the men gave a loud shout, the walls collapsed. And everybody charged in. They took the city. They devoted the city to the Lord and destroyed with the sword every living thing in it. Men, women, young and old, cattle, sheep, and donkeys. That's always kind of a hard story for us to read that. And we see a few times in Scripture where God will do this. The complete genocide, the complete alienation of a particular group of people. And God will only do this for one reason. God orders the total destruction of Jericho because of idolatry. It's the one thing that God will snuff out the innocent, because we cannot tolerate idolatry. We cannot even leave a trace of it. That's the only time that God will kill innocents. Because remember, part of the early commands of God is, you shall have no other gods beside me. And if there's even a hint that that could happen, I'm going to destroy completely what that other thing is. Now, in the midst of this process, when 40 years earlier, when they'd stood on the banks of the Jordan River, they had operated out of fear, trepidation, and pessimism, and a lack of faith. But now Israel has to find a new rhythm in taking the city of Jericho. They have to trust that God is going to go with them. They have to live into their faith. I'm sure the first time they walked around their city, they said, well, what happens if the city doors open and their army comes out? Do we fight? Do we keep walking? What do we do? They had to trust that God knew what he was doing. They had to walk in obedience, which is not always an easy thing to do. And then it says they had to shout or make a proclamation about who God is. They didn't say, they didn't taunt with hateful speech the Jerichoans. They proclaimed who God was, and that's when the walls collapsed. That's when they have victory over the city. Now, if you read forward to Joshua chapter 7, we have a passage that talks about a guy named Achan and the sins that he commits. Achan, you see in what we read now, they say, don't touch anything. Everything is tainted in the city. The only thing that it's good for is to take it and give it to the treasury of God, because God can redeem it. Don't touch any of it, because then what you are doing is you are, by practice, engaging in idolatry. And Achan sees a few coins and a cloak and some armor. He takes it and he buries it under his tent. And then bad things start to happen in Israel. And they realize that somebody has sinned. And they finally figure it out. And it's Achan and his family. And God tells them, take his entire family down to the valley and stone them. God is very serious about idolatry. And God will eradicate anything that will take his place. He will get rid of that in our lives, sometimes with devastating consequences. But the story of God's presence, or Emmanuel through the people, is that they start off with fear and disobedience and idolatry, but they finally seem to find faith. And when they find faith, they have victory over the city of Jericho. The city of Jericho is never rebuilt. It's meant to be destroyed as a landmark. It's kind of the gateway to them taking the promised land, but first they have to destroy the entire city. Now, we've all heard this story before. We know the story, and it's a nice story, and we can bring out nice little nuggets of truth that we can share with each other. The question that I'm going to ask us today is, how does the story really apply to us? If we take this Old Testament story and we kind of overlay it onto our lives, what does it really teach us? And here are some of the questions that it leads us to ask. The first one is this: do we believe in God, or do we live like we believe in God? I know those sound almost the same. There are a lot of people who say, I believe in God, and I pray, and I go to church. But my life really doesn't reflect that. There's a difference between just having a sense of faith and living into the faith that we proclaim to have. And this is a difference for Israel. The first group of people, the parents and grandparents that stood at the brink of the Jordan, they believed in God. They saw God. They loved God. But they weren't willing to live into their faith. They liked having it. They liked having God on a video and at a distance. But they didn't live like they actually believed in the one who had saved them. When we read this story, we have to ask ourselves maybe the more difficult question: what is your Jericho? What is the thing in your life that has become an obstacle? What are the walls that you've built so well? And we all have them, don't we? Most of us know what our Jericho is. Maybe it's a promise that we made ourselves in that first marriage that I will never be treated like this again, ever again. And now we're in our next marriage, and we've got walls. Or maybe it's a bad experience or a hurt or a wound. And we're going to hold on to that wound because it makes us feel good. And forgiveness is not in the cards because I like having my Jericho. Or maybe it's a sin, something that you might have fallen into innocently, and now it has a grip on your life because it's grown, and every year the city seems to get bigger and bigger and more formidable. And when we look at the city, we go, it's too big. I can't overcome that. One thing I've learned about my own life, and maybe in this story as well, is that God will allow us to walk around in our unhealthiness. God will take us to the river's edge, and he'll say, are you ready to overcome this? And we're really good at excuses, aren't we? Well, I'm scared. I don't know how. I don't know what to do. And God will say, okay. Well, then maybe you turn around. Maybe you go back to the desert for a while. And sometimes the desert is a week or a month or a year. And sometimes it literally is 40 years. But the best part about it is that God will walk with us when we are ready. He wants to be Emmanuel. He wants to have mastery and place in our lives. And so maybe we ask ourselves, well, okay, I understand what the Jericho is in my life, but what is my path to victory? How do I attain victory over this huge thing in my life? And the answer is so simple because it's exactly the same way that Israel attained it. You have to start by trusting in God, stepping away from your fear, living into your faith, not just believing your faith, being obedient in what we need to do, and sometimes a shout or a proclamation. And sometimes I found that this is actually literally a shout or a proclamation. Sometimes you have to go to a place in your house or into your room and say, that's enough, no more, it stops now, and yell at yourself and give yourself a marker that says, I'm not going to go any further. Because when we do that, we give God that place in our lives. We expel it. And God is the one who will have the victory in us. I've been reading a book recently, and I tell you that so that you'll think I'm really smart. There was a quote in this book written by a guy named Joseph Campbell, and it's a really good quote. It says this: the cave that we fear most to enter will hold the treasure we most want. The cave that we fear most to enter will hold the treasure that we most want. And I know that's true. fun fact that we learn as we read this story in Joshua is that God has to destroy our Jerichos before he can become Emmanuel. I think sometimes in my life, I'm sure in yours, I like the idea of God walking with me more than I do the reality of God walking with me. Because when God walks with me and I give him the place that he deserves in my life, he destroys the things that I'm not ready to destroy sometimes. And he says, now I can be who I'm intended to be in your life. The walls can and will fall only when we proclaim him as Emmanuel. What that means is, it's only when we are willing to give God place in our lives that he will take us across those rivers and give us victory over the Jerichos of our life. He will become Emmanuel when we stop trying to make him in our image and start to accept that we are made in his. Because I like the God that fits into my box. But that's not the calling of Emmanuel. And so maybe today, the big question is what we've asked already before. Do we believe in God, or do we live like we believe in God? This opportunity has always been present in the pages of Scripture. It's not just found in Jesus. Jesus is the greatest expression of God making himself known to us, and that's the example that we follow. But in every one of our lives, we have an opportunity, a chance, to make a choice for God to be Emmanuel. But it's not an easy choice, because in order to make that choice, we have to be reflective about what our Jerichos are. And 90% of us already know what our Jerichos are, don't we? And if you don't, you can ask God to reveal it to you, and he will. It usually comes from right here. It usually comes from a wound or a hurt that we promised we would never allow out. And so what we've done is we've built these beautiful cities that now we feel that can never be conquered. And we're somewhat living in idolatry, because that city is a stronghold. And God will take us by the hand and he'll say, I want you to walk around. God, I've been walking for 40 years. I'm just ready to be over it. I know. 6 days. And I found something else to be true. When I'm struggling with something, when I come face to face with something that I'm struggling with in my life, and I try to lay it down every single day for a week, there's something powerful about that timeline. That God will reveal it to us, walk us around us, around it, and confront us with it. So when we are willing to follow him, and we finally make a proclamation that he is Emmanuel, the walls collapse. It's not always the easiest thing to do. But then again, anything really worth having is not easy. This is a story about God wanting to be in our lives, to want to rid our lives of those things that keep us from making him Emmanuel, that keep us from living like we believe. But today we have that choice. Today we have the opportunity to destroy Jericho.